Let's see. I was thinking about sometimes a difficulty with the material that one might experience. And I thought I'd share a little story about Dangshan's teacher, who was Yunyan. When I heard this story, I was very encouraged. Yunyan was a young monk in a monastery along with his brother Dawu. And Dawu awakened sometime during the early years of when he was there, but Yunyan just didn't get it. It's said that he practiced like 20 years and just could not understand what were people talking about. So if you have that sense, which I personally did for a good number of years, that please stay with it, because through osmosis or somehow it will come. as it did for Yunyan, obviously, if he's Dangshan's teacher. So we'll have a koan about Dangshan acknowledging and making offerings to his teacher tomorrow. But today we will start with a new koan, unless anybody's has some pressing questions from yesterday. Yes, John?
Actually, it's from the day before yesterday.
No, that's a test. Okay. All right.
Just want to be precise.
That doesn't help.
Forget what I said about the day before. you actually shared a koan with us, I think it was Tuesday evening.
Mm-hmm.
And if I recall, it was very short.
Mm-hmm.
It went like, did it go like this? Form is emptiness. Emptiness, form, silence.
Silence is a form.
Where does silence arise?
How does it arise? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How or where?
How does it arise? Yeah. Well, you can use where if you want. It's your personal call. I'm okay with that one, too. There were
is that the correct? Did I remember that correctly? Except for the
yeah.
Where?
Mm-hmm. So, Kathy also had a question about the other koan that we had. Do you remember what it is? Okay.
In the bottomless bamboo basket, I put the white moon. In the bowl of mindlessness, I store the pure breeze.
Thank you. We'll let that molder a while. So how about you ready? So today I'm really counting on all of you, because you know I can use some help too. And so when we take on this next koan, which is called Case 89, Dangshan's No Grass. So you all have it in your packet. And we'll see how far we get to Sharon's question yesterday, I think. It was about, is there more to it than just the introduction and the case? So there's a little bit more that I've included in the handout on Case 89. But actually, there's still more for that one. There's added sayings and another commentary, possibly another verse. So if we really want to go deep into it, I have the Book of Serenity. So before we read it, I just want to alert you to just things to look for before we just, you know, do the deep dive. So in terms of the introduction, remember to look at the first and second lines of the introduction and apply them to your life. Mm-hmm. And then next, look for a parallel form of comparing and contrasting and indicate the topic. So we might want to consider what the topics are. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the images. What are they? What do they evoke from, you know, your understanding or just your experience? It could be in the conventional world. Come on, you know, I'm all okay with that. And then there is a question. Of course, not in this one. So sometimes there's a question, or it's also there's a look, see, declarative statement. So it can be a question or that kind of statement at the end of the introduction. And then just a reminder that the introduction is what places us in the fundamental seat of consciousness. So we're going to get direction from where to go after we've read the introduction. Then we can move to the case. So, maybe to... Yes?
So, the introduction is the koan. That is the verb. That's the
it's the case. The case is considered...
No.
I know. Well, there's so much in the introduction. So, most people would just skip the introduction, but actually, there's just a lot there.
But it seems like in the introduction, excuse me for just saying,
yeah.
But it seems like in the introduction is where we're supposed to relate it to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, isn't that kind of an integral part of...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, of course.
So, but some people skip it, so it must not matter all that much, right?
Yeah. But I don't know why the ancients would write it if they didn't think it was important. So I think it is important, and it's just that some of the other formats for koans don't have that introduction.
Oh. Okay.
So in the Mumonkan, is there another? And
just introduction. Yeah.
There is introduction?
Yeah. Real short, little introduction.
Little short?
Yeah.
Couple phrases?
Yeah.
Sentences?
You said one sentence.
One
yeah.
sentence?
Yeah. Yeah.
There you have it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, by Mumon Khan himself, I believe. And these introductions are by, aren't they by Hongzhi?
No, that would be...
In the Sri Rupa?
In the Book of Serenity? Mm-hmm. I don't know who writes the introductions. But then who does all the verses in case? And commentary. So we don't know who's doing what.
Okay.
How's that for starting out on the right foot with koan?
Sounds very zen.
Yeah, I was just curious, it's called a case. Does it imply something to work on, or something to cure, or fix?
They're actually public cases, which were part of Chan, or Chinese literature, and this is the way student and teacher related during the... must be what? How back? Far back? Tang
Dynasty.
So, public cases. And go ahead.
Oh, they became so famous. They got passed around. They became public, and then they became a kind of teaching aid, you could say, or something. But somehow or another, it was famous, you know, that this conversation or something.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's just a statement, too.
Mm-hmm.
It varies, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we ready? Let's see. Who would like to start? Maybe we should just go with... we'll read the introduction and the case and then go into each of those and then see how much is still percolating, and we can continue with the commentary. I also have a Dharma Hall discourse from Dogen that's on comments that incorporates this Dungshan's No Grass. So if we have time, we could do that one too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Chair.
Yes.
Okay. Case 89, Dongshan's No Grass. Introduction. Move and you bury your body 10,000 feet deep. Don't move and sprouts grow right where you are. You must cast off both sides and let middle go. Then you must buy some sandals and travel some more before you really attain realization. Case. Dongshan said to the assembly, "It's the beginning of autumn and the end of summer, and you brethren will go, some to the east, some west. You must go where there's not an inch of grass for 10,000 miles. He also said, "But where there's not an inch of grass for 10,000 miles, how can you go?" Xin Shuang said, "Going out the gate, immediately there's grass." Dai Yang said, "I'd say, even not going out the gate, still the grass is boundless."
Okay. So, how about we start with the title?
Winter.
Winter. No grass. All right.
Desert.
Mm-hmm. No grass.
Back to yesterday, like river.
Uh-huh.
Mountain.
Hmm. River meaning?
Meaning, we're using it as a metaphor for the absolute.
Mm-hmm.
Water, the water element, there's no grass.
Mm-hmm.
It's boundless.
Yeah. No grass.
That's boundless river. Boundless grass. Yeah. Boundless. No grass.
So, how about if you think of the Heart Sutra? No eyes, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. Okay, there's that religious use of the word no. And when you use no in front of something, you've dropped into the ultimate. No differentiation there. So that's a kind of a clue, that word no. No grass. So now we have Dongshan talking about no grass. So.
Can you be no thinking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Materialism is my first thought.
Which is what? I'm sorry.
Materialism?
Self-seeking.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, any other thoughts?
I guess I was thinking of the grass, like, as the boundless sentient beings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's how I was thinking of it.
Well, let's kind of hold all those ideas and then see how they play out in the introduction and the case. Okay? So, move and you bury your body 10,000 feet deep. Don't move, and sprouts grow right where you are. What's this 10,000 feet? What do you think that's?
Mm-hmm. Is that some number in their culture that means bound and ultimate, infinite, as much as possible?
Yeah, maybe it's related to the myriad things, 10,000 things, or myriad things. It's kind of, it takes in, you know, which would mean what when we talk about things? Kind of where are we? What position are we in when we're talking about things?
Relative.
The relative, right? So maybe it applies there. So that's so. If we move and we'll bury the body in 10,000, we'll bury the body 10,000 feet deep. Okay, but when we don't move. What happens when we don't move?
We're rusty.
Mm-hmm. We don't get anywhere.
We don't get anywhere, right? How about our minds when we don't move our mind? We don't get anywhere.
Where the mortise sets in.
There you go.
So could this be an allusion to death in either case? If you're already dead.
So it could be metaphor, yeah. You know, when you think, well, yeah, we can see if that one applies, but I think it could be. Anything's possible in a course. No answers, right? We're just exploring. So, what about this idea about not moving? So, in our practice, we talk about there's no fixed self. There's no fixed anything. So if we don't move and we become rigid, then how is that, you know, when we're, you know, like buried under 10,000 things? So are they opposites, or can you see any relationship? Puzzled mind.
Mm-hmm. Just bury the body, right? Not the mind. Bury the body.
Yeah. But remember, we're in the language of metaphors. But bury the body, yeah. But you don't have a body without a mind. Or you can have a mind without a body, I suppose. I don't know. Maybe a body without a mind. Either way, you're dead. Yeah, if you don't have one or the other, probably. Yes, good one. Yes.
I think the grass is a metaphor for knowledge.
Knowledge of the absolute.
Okay.
So you move. I mean, if you don't move, there's stillness. When there's stillness, there's emptiness. When there's emptiness, there's knowledge of the absolute. If you move, you're 10,000 feet away from the knowledge. But when you don't move, then the knowledge sprouts. Just a metaphor. And I think that relates to the case as well, because you talk about grass.
Mm-hmm.
And grass in this case, again, is the knowledge about the absolute. So the Dongshan gives the instruction to his monks, say, go where there is not an inch of grass for 10,000 feet. In other words, go where there is no knowledge among people.
Mm.
He sends them out to the monastery, but he also says, how will you go if there is no knowledge?
Mm.
In other words, you have to be the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then Shishuan says, going out of the gate immediately there is grass. In other words, when the monk that has the knowledge gets out of the gate, well, he's the grass, right? A metaphor too. And then the extension of it is, Dayan says, even not going out of the gate, still the grass is boundless.
Mm-hmm.
Because Buddha nature is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think the only piece here, maybe need some work, is the second sentence of the introduction. It's just a sort of an advice,
mm-hmm.
to stay in the middle way, right?
Mm-hmm,
the best
mm-hmm.
way is the middle way, so you cast with both sides. You take the middle way, and then even when one has an insight and temporary enlightenment, potentially, or understanding, one still has to put the sandals on and travel, because, you know, once the rice is pounded, it's not mid-sifting.
That's right.
So, there's some time, so there's some past completely, you know, the perfect Dharma.
What do you think?
Next call.
There you go.
There's one on the door. Does anybody notice the corn on the door?
The candles? About the candles?
Yes. Coming out? Our candles are low.
So there is, some history that sometimes when you work with a koan, you don't know. I think what you were saying about the first two phrases, it can also be that anytime you are in any extreme, one way or the other, that's considered, as Yvonne said, it's not the middle way. So, that's when practice is more difficult and you lose your way because you're caught in the extremes. So, he's instructing us, or whoever is speaking is suggesting that we become aware of that. So... let's see.
Maybe, I could go back too. It just reminds me, of the grass hut.
Mm-hmm.
And how we went off and built the grass hut, and it goes back to that everything is right here.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right here. Mm-hmm. We don't have to go out anywhere to get it because it's all right here.
Mm-hmm.
No.
So in the grass hut, also it says, let me see, something about he built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relaxed and take a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared.
Right.
Now it's been covered in weeds. It kind of reminds you of that image of the sprouts grow right where you are.
Mm-hmm. But I was just thinking about how he went out and
mm-hmm.
built the hut.
Right,
you really don't have to go out and build the hut. I mean, it's nice to do it, like going and sitting in the tea hut this morning. but because everything we need is, just turn and look inside. We're all
mm-hmm.
Buddhas.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think... that question, where it says, he also said, but where there's not an inch of grass for 10,000 miles, how can you go? The answer from Shishuan said, going out of the gate, immediately there's grass.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's answering that question by saying, it's unavoidable. It's everywhere?
Mm-hmm.
That was my take, too.
So these last three statements or questions are, I think, very related. Even Dayang's, I'd say, even not going out the gate.
Don't even.
Still
the
grass.
Still. It's
Here now, the interesting thing is, remember how we talked about how you move from everyday mind into, the ultimate. And so sometimes the use of the word grass might be in the sense of the conventional world, but then it seems to flip. And when I first went through this koan, I thought, okay, now where am I? Where is this in the koan? Because sometimes you think you're in the conventional world, but in fact, if you think more deeply about what is being said or questioned, raised, then it can actually move you into the ultimate. Yeah, just...
But
the gate is used frequently throughout...
Mm-hmm.
The Buddhist canon. What is the gate? What are some of its meanings?
Well, gate. We have the gateless gate. So, something you pass through, right? And sometimes it's a physical gate, but more than likely it's a barrier. So they have a gate, I think, in the temples, And when you go out the gate, now you're into everyday world. That's kind of the symbolism. And I think in Japan, I think you were there recently, and there may be others who've been to Japan where you go into these temples, that there's an actual place for the entry, like at Eheiji, you know, before you actually get into the monastery grounds, there is some...
Sanban, a gate house.
A gate house, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that right, Jerome? Sanban? Mm-hmm. Okay. Gate house.
Gate house. And this is where generally people, before they were admitted to the monastery, you stayed for 7 days or a month. I don't know how long.
Until they let you in.
Knock, knock, knocking at my door, right? yes.
So, what kind, you know, it says, I'd say even not going out the gate, still the grass is boundless. So what kind of container is that then? I mean, it seems like there's this stuff that we're talking about, that he's talking about with the monks, and then there's that other stuff on the other side of the gate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if the grass where we are, that seems like it's a finite space, is boundless, how is that even...
Well, if you look at the grass when it's too... from the aspects of his two truths, so conventional and ultimate. So grass can be both. Is both.
Well, I know, I'm just throwing that out there because it's like... You know, it's like, you know, we kind of like are creating these metaphors with specific, almost like a specific meaning, like, okay, so the monastery is, I don't know...
Mm-hmm.
The self or the mind or whatever, but it kind of kills it for me a little bit because mm-hmm. it's just another word.
Kind mm-hmm. of.
So to me, just thinking about the fact that there's infinity here of grass,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what's out there, but how is that even possible, sort of thing. I don't know what I'm trying to say, except for it's confusing.
Another consideration of gate is like we have this in English, the gate of the senses. So, mm-hmm. and so in the sense of a meditative state, your senses wouldn't be out sort of meeting the world. You wouldn't be outside the gate. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you could look at that this way,
mm-hmm.
and not leaving, not being inside the gate, you know, being inside the monastery, is like being inside the realm of practice, which is not with your senses reaching out to the world, but looking within and settling it inside. So. It can work that way as well.
And
too.
Is there any difference between
exactly.
inside and outside of the gate?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and well, that's actually so they say, no matter mm-hmm. where you go,
right?
There you are.
Sameness, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking too, in the context of the five ranks, could the grass? I think you mentioned this, but maybe we didn't. Talk about it enough in the context of the five ranks. The grass is particularity.
Mm-hmm.
It's things.
Mm-hmm.
It's differentiation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the first question is where do you go? You know, it's actually said you must go where there's not an inch of grass for 10,000 miles. So that's kind of the imperative of practice. You must go
mm-hmm.
where actually the particularity of the world, the differentiation of things, is it's gone. And yet, this also says, wherever you go. There's things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a very interesting mm-hmm. turn mm-hmm. there. Yeah. Even if you go outside the gate, mm-hmm. or even within the gate, even within the right. even within the highest state of meditation, mm-hmm. within the gate, mm-hmm. still there's stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, there's always the causes and conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Always. Yeah. They're always there.
Well, the verse says it explicitly. In the verse, it says rest boundless inside, outside. So, I mean,
oh, you're at that verse.
I should have skipped maybe, but it seems to explicitly work.
Where
oh, he's on the next page. He's jumped ahead to the essay.
Good lead it.
Quite prophetic of you.
And then related to the introduction where it says, this is really the part that's, I think, bothered me the most. You must cast off both sides and let middle go. Then you must buy some sandals and travel some more before you really attain realization. I'm not seeing that as the middle way, because I'm seeing that as you cast off both sides and let the middle, what's remaining, go. So then there's nothing, right? And so what do you, the hell do you need the sandals for, you know? What is... Why? What?
Well, and historically, like in this context, monks actually traveled to other monasteries because in the case of, and we'll probably see that in the commentary, in the case of Yunyan, he studied for a very long time with one teacher and it didn't bring him into realization. Then he traveled to another teacher. And so there was not this, you know, no separation between the different monasteries. Everybody knew each other. And so they actually encouraged their students to go meet with the other teachers. So if you have some level of realization, you know, you may continue with another teacher, and that may be helpful.
Well, that's interesting, because you answered me in a very practical answer to this question, where I was asking it in more of a, isn't he saying that you let both sides go, and you discard both sides and let the middle go, meaning that there's really nothing there?
Mm-hmm. Well, there is the going beyond. Yes, there is that going beyond. So that takes you, so actually in one or two sentences, we've moved from the extremes, right? We moved into the middle, and then we let go of the middle. So, again, it's the notion that there's no fixed self, there's nothing to grasp onto in this teaching. So movement is moment by moment. This kind of work is also trying to bring that out for you, to show that there isn't, or to for you to intuit that there's no fixed reality in that sense.
I was also wondering whether the sandals means that you're holding both the that goes back to the ranks. You're actually in the phenomenal and in the particular at the same time, because you've got sandals,
mm-hmm.
and you're traveling, but really you're maybe I'm not reading this right, but it seems like okay, so you're not a sprouted, you're not fixed, and you're not basically, I'm just seeing that you're nothing.
You're empty.
However, maybe the words are important. However, you want to say it, and you're still here.
Right. Right. There's
another way to say that is you're free.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're free.
What's that?
You're free.
Mm-hmm.
You're free. Yeah. You're free. Mm-hmm. You're free to travel.
Yeah.
Or
mm-hmm.
not.
Free, right? But you can't not have sandals because you're here.
Mm-hmm.
They're easier on the feet.
But the writing goes out of his way to say buy the sandals. I mean, why do they say buy the sandals? I mean, assume something you don't have yet. I mean, it's a little clumsy to put that way. You know, you don't have that yet. You have to get it.
Is it so you can travel?
It's like saying study. Study the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was my first
Sharon.
I'm just Because somebody was talking about let middle go.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you really think of letting something go, like, oh, I'm worried about this. I'll let it go. But somehow when I read this, it didn't seem to mean that in that usual way that we think of it. To me, it almost seemed like cast off both sides and let the middle continue. Let the middle, yeah, go wherever you're trapped, whatever, or at least the shadow of the middle, you know, stay with that.
Mm-hmm.
More than all the
mm-hmm.
other extreme sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could be interpreting this based on modern the way we talk now, and maybe that isn't the right translation.
Well, I think it's like there isn't as much right or wrong in this as much as how is it resonating with you. And for you, Sharon, you know, that might, you know, evoke some thoughts about maybe in your own life. And so when you would see that, you'd say, well, So that's why you study koans for a koan for a long period of time, because the value in that is that, okay, we'll read this today, and you know, you take this home with you, and then read it in a week or another day, and see what do you think, what comes up for you, and do you see other layered meanings? Because in koans, there's layered teachings of all different kinds. We're just touching the surface here of some of the teachings. So when you study it longer, you're going to see dependent origination. You're going to see the five hindrances. You're going to see the five ranks, which we saw, the two truths, conventional and ultimate. You're going to see Wheel of Life and Death, the 12 links of dependent origination. You might see the Four Noble Truths. So they're all there in some form. Not one, not all of them in everyone, but there are many teachings. So it's going to take a little while. And that's why when we're in the circle, it appears that someone may have sorted through. Well, maybe in one sense, yes, but then there's still much more. And then how, most importantly, does it work for you? What are you experiencing it, and how can you apply it to your life? Yes.
I was thinking of, you know, the last sentence there about putting your sandals on and going as being, you know, that fifth rank of inner penetration where, you know, the person's let go of everything, you know, as he was saying, even mm-hmm. let go of the middle, so there's this emptiness. But what do you do after you, have a realization or attain some enlightenment? Well, you go back and you go back to the world and you do what you do, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is putting on your sandals and walking.
Mm-hmm.
But you're doing it to attain a complete realization. You have to bring your awareness is to bear on your daily activities. So you're doing both. You're doing
mm-hmm.
the relative and the absolute, both interpenetratively.
Mm-hmm.
Is how I was thinking of it.
Tea?
Okay. Sorry.
Like the last ox herding picture going back.
Yes.
Yeah.
The ox herding picture. I think the last one is the return to the marketplace. So that could be another interpretation of putting on the sandals and traveling, besides with historical context. Yes?
In this period, where there are situations where a monk would finish his work and then
could be going mm-hmm. to another monastery, like you said. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes they'll say, like, go ask Tiantong. Ask him what do you think, you know, and it's a kind of how would I say it's a way for people to say, well, okay, if you're unclear, go check with Tiantong. Tiantong Rujin was Dogen's teacher. And so, you know, there's some of this, you're not sure about timing and everything, but when they mention, there are a couple of Tiantongs, I think, in the ancestor church. I know there's Tiantong Rujin, but I don't I think there might be a couple. But anyway, I do know there one Tian Tang Ruching is Dogen's teacher. So people would recommend to speak to somebody who, during the time, they felt might be able to help with their training and clarify some questions. I think Yunyan had some like
are you,
that.
Are you asking us to go seek another teacher to understand
the
book? There you go. Oh, wow. I'm really asking.
Or let's go down the hill and go shopping.
Oh, but then we have to choose. We go down the hill that way or we go down this way.
Or the middle way.
Well, we're stuck here.
You know, one other thought that I had about grass was around cultivation, because I thought, well, you know, grass, lawns, you know, in America, this is so contemporary, I said. But, you know, we cultivate our lawns for those that have them. And, you know, they, you know, and so in a sense, I thought, well, that's a, another kind of thing of cultivation, how grass grows. And there's something in a lot of the koans about 100 grass tips. And that's like the tips are the sages, and the 100 grasses are, I sometimes think they mean thoughts. So, you know, I'm not clear about it. Sometimes depending on which koan you're reading, the context is different. And so the imagery just will keep on expanding for you, as, and you'll see that it doesn't have one interpretation, and it just reinforces the teaching that, you know, this is contextual. So whatever we're studying, it's, you know, in this, within this context.
There might be some things unique to China that only Karen would know, or something.
That's right.
There's a lot of grass in Changsha because he talks about having lived in Changsha. It's actually green there. It's not in the desert, so
there
is a lot of grass.
There is a lot of grass.
And here in California, probably means to stay away from smoking marijuana.
Well, should we try the commentary and just let's see what that's like? So, well, like, no, yeah, go ahead.
During the changes of the Hushang era, Karen, I know I massacred that. 845 to 847, when Buddhism was persecuted by the Chinese government. Xi Shuang, we all know different pronunciation. What is it? Do you know? Xi Shuang.
We'll ask Karen.
Xi Shuang.
Xi Shuang.
Xi Shuang.
Lived among potters in Changsha, garbed in peasant clothing in 847, the beginning of the Daozong. I think Karen should read this.
Okay, so
okay.
In 847, the beginning of the Daozong area, a monk king who had spent a
yeah, because I think of it, I think of that as like limiting the view,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and to go outside of it is to unlimited.
Why is it harder, I wonder?
Well, contrast with the sentence before it, though. The sentence before it says, setting foot in the forest of thorns, that's easy. And then it says, this is hard.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. The forest of thorns in the... Maybe you're right. Maybe it's... outside the luminous screen. The luminous screen is the house lit within.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. You're right, Christopher.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
So it's our house? Our what's inside?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. Going outside in the thorns,
shopping
right?
Shopping is easy. Right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Going out shopping with thorns, that's no problem.
Hmm.
So Mike, are you suggesting it's the self?
Yeah, Christopher noted that it's like the I think the metaphor is like a house.
Mm-hmm.
If we looked at it from the outside, we'd see that the house at night was there was light coming from it,
mm-hmm.
from the paper windows. That's the luminous screen. So that's the light within. Or
what does he mean? How many kinds? Kinds of what?
Where?
In the verse.
In the verse.
Maybe this is going to refer to the boundless grass, maybe?
Kinds of grasses?
Mm-hmm. How many kinds?
Maybe it means this luminosity or this manifestation is not one thing or not one person,
mm-hmm.
or not one source.
Mm-hmm.
It's
one
everywhere.
It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. How many kinds, mm-hmm. right?
So but like mm-hmm. the forest of thorns, would that be like the ordinary mind?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
the world of particularity,
mm-hmm.
or the world of differentiation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the look is part of this notion or structure of stopping and seeing.
Mm-hmm. The mirror. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See what's going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What is the kinds? How many kinds?
Oh, that's what. That's what we were saying. Actually, Christopher had brought it up. Like we thought that many ways that in suchness, in boundlessness, is manifested in all the ways here, right? So all the other, the 10,000 things.
Okay.
To set foot in the forest of thorns is easy. You know, just to stay where we are in the middle of all these thorns.
Kind of prickly, but you know.
But to really work on kind of getting beyond that, whatever beyond means. I mean, when I think of a luminous screen, I don't think of it as being blocked, being a blockage between you and me. I think of it as, I mean, luminous.
Mm.
It's like, wow.
Mm.
and that's hard. I'm not supposed to say attain, but it's hard to be that.
I just saw some irony there with the look, how many kinds. As if it's so great. Maybe he's being slightly ironic to the extent that the next sentence is, for the wild went along with the old chew, the same initiation of the cold. It doesn't sound like anything great. It sounds like it's the same old thing, really the same old initiation. So to the extent that look, how many kinds, it may be going again to comment on the grass boundless, and then moving forward to the thorns versus the outside the luminous screen. And then about the fall of the spring wind into the scars of the burning. Scars of the burning, is that some kind of healing from something that was burned versus emaciation in the cold? So to that extent, that's why I'm thinking of look, many kinds. It's like kind of like an attractive nuisance almost.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, it's my impression.
Mm-hmm.
old tree is sometimes a metaphor for the Buddha, for the ancient Buddha. So if you read that, for a while practicing Buddhism, for this time being, being going along with the Buddhist way, with the same emaciation in the cold. In other words, the emaciation in the cold. Yes. In other words, I was kind of reading that like emaciation in the cold. Sometimes the practice is the ascetic sense of the practice, that you don't follow your passions. This is not a practice of heat, of tapas. This is a practice of coolness, of settling and dispersing, of releasing. Yeah, so so in a sense like that, even though it's just, kind of a really dense metaphor, I don't know if this is true. Maybe there's other interpretations. I was thinking, for the time being, I'm going to follow the Buddha's way. I'm going to follow this old tree, Buddha, and do this dispassionate work. Mm-hmm. And I'm just about to follow the spring wind. In other words, I have intimations that new life is coming, and it's coming into the scars of the burning, into the actual trouble of my life, or into all the mess I've made. This new spring wind is coming. So actually, those last two lines could be read in a very positive way.
I like your way much better.
You
always
win.
Wait. The wind carries the grass seeds, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yes. We're back to the grass.
That's right.
Does emaciation imply renunciation?
It means being thin, doesn't it? You're just thin.
Emaciation? Starving.
Because that's typical of a severe practice, right? I mean, very rigorous practice. Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's emaciated.
I didn't look this word up.
I'm thinking right now, where's the dictionary?
Where's the dictionary?
Yeah. I think it would be unhealthy. I think it would be thin, but in an unhealthy way.
They're right at the end. Almost at the end.
Maybe it's going along with the same old thing. Maybe you're supposed to keep everything fresh and new.
But then there's hope in the next line. I'm just about to follow that spring wind.
That's why. That's why
the practice, is just such drudgery, I mean, and then once in a while when we're
I thought it was pure pleasure.
What did you say?
He said he thought it was pure pleasure.
Always.
I think when we're talking about he talks about the spring wind, but the cold makes things shrivel up. Things get very thin and very shriveled, and they don't have that fullness. And
what is the progress here from cold to spring to burning?
What is that? Just open it.
Just the one, yeah.
I kind of look at it as a mirror. I mean, we go through, we're constantly going through, the causes and conditions of life, and they're always there, and, it's from moment to moment, and whatever, we're dealing with that. So we're going from the cold to the spring to the fire to the, it's just a continuum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last line speaks strongly to me of impermanence.
That's the word that I keep going to, is impermanence.
Yeah.
Impermanence.
Mm-hmm. It's the spring wind. It's also when it promotes burning once you set a flame to it.
Yeah.
So it's life-giving and
living here in California, you know, like I have to get past my fear of, you know, spring is followed by fire season.
That's right.
This is what I'm talking about. But, you know, there is that piece of it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that points back to the look how many kinds, all these myriad things, and just as the world turns.
Mm-hmm.
Or how many wonders and how many different ways to look at things,
mm-hmm.
instead of just going along with the same old tree and be seated.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything in life, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the screen thing, you know, to me too, a screen is not a wall. You know, it is something you can see through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even like this, you can see the light behind it. You can see mm-hmm. a person standing behind it. You know, so it's not like a solid type, you know, like a wall, like a stone wall. But, you know, so it's... Yeah, I find that interesting, that turn the body outside. It's like, wow. Hmm. It's the getting out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, that line conveys a whole different image in our time. I read that, and not even if I didn't think this was Zen, I'd be thinking this is somebody that's addicted to the TV, the luminous screen.
Turning the body outside that.
That's
our luminous. Mm-hmm. 42 inch flat screen.
That's right, you know. LCD. HDD.
This is kind of like seeing out there, but it's getting out there. It's actually putting yourself.
Are we ready to go into Dogen's?
Yeah.
Want to try that one for? Just try it on here. This is one of his Dharma Hall discourses.
Is this the whole thing?
That's it. This is from Dogen's extensive record, which is all these small discourses. Dharma Hall discourses were presented by Dogen to his students. They'd assemble in the Buddha Hall, and everybody'd be standing. He'd get up on his seat, you know, he's got this high seat, and he'd just... you know, give out this Dharma Hall discourse. And then usually the instruction was he'd either say something about it, you know, what he was talking about. He'd say, Dogen would say. Then he'd just say, well, now let's go bathe ourselves in the meditation hall. We're going to do some more zazen. So that was the format. They just stood, listened to this short teaching, and then went into the meditation hall. So, these are just wonderful. If you ever have a chance to get into Dogen's extensive record, it's just absolutely fabulous. So many, just wonderful. So here now he's talking about one thing about Dogen is he always invokes the ancestors, invariably, in some form. And he's referencing other teachings. So when he either invokes the ancestor or he's going to tell us a story, and he's going to put the Dogen spin on it. Well, that's what he does, you know. I think because all of his monks knew the stories. So unlike us, we don't know all the stories of Dongshan and Dao and Yunyan. We just don't know that. We weren't brought up in that culture. So we have to, you know, share the koans and share the Zen stories because we don't know them like they do. So let's see what Dogen says here about this. Cliff, would you like to entertain us here with this?
9, an ancient said, the bright, clear hundreds of grass tips are...
That's it. Pithy, pithy teachings here.
As I read it, it had no meaning.
No. Well, did you see the reference to the grass, right? Dongshan? Mm-hmm. And there were even phrases. There were even key phrases from. Now, Dogen is also very skilled at moving us from one position, and, like maybe in the relative position, then flipping us into the ultimate or universal. So here he called upon the ancestors and reminded us that, you know, the grass tips are the bright, clear mind of the ancestral teachers. And now the reference, I think the next line is really his understanding or interpretation of the teaching, where he's, and it's just another, it's for Dogen, you know, he has multiple Dharma Hall discourses, sometimes on the same subject, so the next one he would say something a little bit different. So again, it's this facets of reality. It's not that one is right or the other one not right, or it's really that they're just different ways of seeing reality. And so he's just giving you, at this moment, what, you know, he's thinking. So the fact that he even is providing us encouragement by saying, staying within the gate, do not wait for the brightness of others. In other words, illuminate yourself. And, of course, how do we do that? And he says, you know, it's important for you to practice, and you can also easily lose your way without practice. So, and then oftentimes the last line is to really just bring you right back into the present of what's going on. So, you know, it might be raining out for all we know when he wrote this, but whatever he's doing, he's bringing us right back into. If we were moving out there in history, which appeared to be not right now, he's reminding us, don't forget, we are right here, right now, with his statement of, even those hard of hearing are moved by the sound of the evening rain. Just, it's very present. It just brings us all right here. It's really the skill of Dogen to be able to do that. So,
could that be a metaphor for enlightenment? That sometimes when people have been practicing for a long time, just a sound will bring them mm-hmm. to this awareness.
Sure. There is that the teaching about the. The stone hitting the bamboo, right? Just have, you know, the cone of one hand clapping.
Bell.
No, that was later. The bell, right? Mm-hmm. It's if we talk about the stone hitting the bamboo, and I don't know which ancestor of ours awakened, hearing the sound of the stone.